because there's more oil than we could ever use. The bottleneck, as we describe in Black Gold Stranglehold, is that we have not built a new refinery in the last 30 years. So with all the crude oil that's available, even if the Saudis gave us twice as much, we couldn't refine it fast enough to get it into the gas pumps or into heating oil. That's the bottleneck right there.
Why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we building new refineries?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. Of course, we can thank the environmentalists for giving us cleaner air and cleaner water, but we can also thank them for keeping refineries from being built. We have a situation in Mobile, Arizona. It's just a little outside of Yuma, Arizona. There's nothing that can live there, George, but Gila monsters and rattlesnakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a fellow McGinnis that wants to build a refinery out there. He's been working on it for years, spent millions of dollars. He's not even in the permit stages because the environmentalists say he's going to wreck the desert. George, if you drove in this area, you would say, why in the world are we not put? This is, nobody wants to live there.
Right.
This guy
There's
wants to build
there.
It there.
You can't even visit it, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's too hot in the middle of the summer. I mean, it's like Death Valley. And the bottom line is it's a perfect place for a refinery. Why aren't we doing it? And people are, you know, Hurricane Katrina showed a lot of weaknesses that we have in the system for refining and distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't show any weaknesses in crude because there are no weaknesses in crude, quite frankly. We can get all the crude we can get our hands on right now, and we need to get more of it domestically. But I want to remind your listeners that at the height of Katrina, wholesale gas prices went up to $2.60 a gallon. That's wholesale.
Wholesale.
That doesn't count profit and taxes distribution and so on and so forth. But people forget in December of 2004, George, wholesale gas prices were $1 a gallon. So they went from $1 to $2.60. Now they're back down to about $1.65 wholesale, $2.60 at the pump. And everybody's going, oh boy, we're much better off than we were. No, we're 60% higher than where we were just 10 months ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And George, it's going to have a ripple effect. All the truckers out there tonight that are driving, worried about how these huge costs for diesel fuel are impacting their lives. Well, virtually everything we have in America has to be shipped by truck at some point or other.
Mm-hmm.
So as the costs of trucking fuel go up, that's going to have an impact on all the other goods and services that we buy.
Or it's also going to squeeze out these independent truckers who have their own small businesses.
Exactly.
They went out and financed their own cab, and their margins deal with the price of fuel. That's where their profit is. And if the price of fuel keeps going the way it is, they're going to get wiped out.
That's correct. And if their elected representatives that they sent to Washington, D.C. were to embrace the seven steps that we outline in the back of this book, their prices would be down literally overnight. Because if the oil market saw tomorrow that the United States was serious about moving forward in this area and being the leader in this area, you'd see the prices drop overnight, because we can beat the world at anything we set our minds to. We have the technology, we have the human resource and the natural resource and the capital markets to do it with.
Why did the price stay so high and is still high in Europe? Why is it up so high? What's going on there? And why haven't the people there simply been outraged over what's happening?
As long as price is an interesting thing, as long as people will pay it, they're going to still continue to charge it. The distances are not as great in Europe as people drive. But the truth is, in the United States, where we have had traditionally lower costs of fuel with larger distances to drive, we build a society based on having available cheaper fuel. That fuel is available.
Mm-hmm.
We could be oil independent. Like Craig pointed out, we wrote Black Gold Stranglehold with an action plan, seven steps that we've outlined that could get us oil independent today. And if your listeners and the readers call Congress, this is a plan that's going to affect their lives and change the situation where we can have reasonable prices of gas and heating fuel. The congressmen and senators will listen. Now, these offices, I've spent time in congressional offices. They're small. The staffs are overwhelmed. They start getting 20, 30, 40, 50 calls. That shuts everything down, and the congressmen listen. If the public gets on the phone and says, we need more refineries, we need to implement these seven steps of the action plan in Black Gold Stranglehold, let's explore the abiotic theory of oil. Let's see if we can find more oil off the continental shelf. In Alaska and Canada combined, there's more oil there than in Saudi Arabia.
And aren't we sending oil from the Alaskan pipeline to Japan? Is that true?
Yes, we are exporting oil. We are an oil exporter as well as an oil importer.
I mean, we need it, but we're exporting it. And I bet we're making more money sending it out.
You're absolutely right. And what most people don't understand, George, is oil is fungible. If we get oil from the Middle East and we get oil from the Alaskan pipeline, it all goes into a big pot, so to speak.
Right.
We might ship a million barrels of that back overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So oil, like Jerry and I talk about in the book, more than likely we've probably had Iranian oil in America, even though we have an embargo against Iran, because Iran probably sold it to, let's say, Gabon,
sure.
Or Gabon ultimately sold
that's
it to us.
That's how some of these companies, like Halliburton, they form a subsidiary offshore. That company then does work with Iran, or did it with Iraq, and they get away with it. I guess it's the same way.
And, George, as long as we are dependent upon foreign countries, we write in the book and explain to the public that, for instance, Mexico, we import about 1.7 million barrels of oil from Mexico every day. Because we do that, we also then have a harder time closing our borders to illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
The illegal immigrants that get in here from Mexico send money back home, and the foreign currency and the payments going back to Mexico from illegals working here is one of the largest sources of foreign currency for Mexico.
Sure. And the money they're sending back, the U.S. dollars they make here, must be huge compared with what they could make in Mexico.
They are huge. And then countries like Iran, who's a devoted enemy of the United States and Israel, they're getting $200 million a day in windfall oil profits. With that money, they can make weapons. So by our dependence upon foreign countries and keeping the price of oil high by not having refineries and getting the supply into the market, we're funding the enemies of the United States, including terrorists.
And we know for a fact now, George, in the war in Iraq, that a lot of the insurgency is being supported, and in some cases the actual physical bodies are coming from Iran to sponsor terrorism in the streets of Baghdad.
Well, and they've got then, if this is true, an endless supply of cash.
Exactly.
Because I've been saying, and I've talked with my friends, where are they getting the money for these weapons?
That's right.
Where are they getting it? Every one of them is armed.
Iran has nationalized their oil industry. They pay people very poorly. They've let the infrastructure deteriorate. $200 million a day coming into the mullahs. They're able to take that money, buy public relations and lawyers around the world,
mm-hmm.
to keep themselves out of the Security Council, and buy weapons. And that's free cash flow to them.
Absolutely.
Because they do not have to share it with the workers. It does not enter their economy. They can get wealthy on it and come and fund terrorism.